7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 27 of Color of Magic, your magic podcast, where we try to raise the profiles of the less visible in the magic community. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and for 27 episodes, I still have my friend Brian Allen here. How you doing, dude?
Doing good. How about you?
We're surviving the lockdown okay, man. It's different, but becoming a bit normal, which is both positive and weird. So
yeah.
Make of it what you will. How are y'all doing down there in Texas?
Doing okay, but man, you know, I drove yesterday for the first time in probably about a week, and it's almost like you forget after a little while. It's
I gotta ask you a serious question, though.
Okay.
How much do you still love your kids now that you've been around them for 3 weeks?
Everybody's, I think, still doing okay. You know, it's
tough, man. It's a change of pace, but we're all getting through it. So yeah, we do have a guest this week, so we kind of want to run through our news, notes, and updates pretty quick here. But we don't want to leave out one of our favorite segments. So what did you learn last week, Brian?
As you were kind of talking about the kiddos, I learned I made the right decision not being a teacher, because we're still trying to do a little bit of, you know, and they're sending out guidelines, you know, for stuff that they still would like the kids to try to learn, even though they're not officially in school. And man, teachers, we can't thank you enough.
For sure. One, credit to you guys for dealing with that, or any parents listening that have kids at home, because I have none and I can only imagine how difficult that would be right now. You know, and the other half of that is definitely, you know, props to teachers. You know, I think sometimes people forget, especially at the lower grade levels, teachers almost function both as childcare and as educators.
Yeah.
And we don't respect them nearly enough, at least in the U.S. for sure. So, yeah, I think parents now are getting to see all the work their teachers actually do for them.
Yep.
Yeah, as for myself, one of the things I learned, and actually maybe more realized than learned, was that during this time, there are actually quite a lot of content creators that aren't producing as much content during the lockdowns. You know, and some of it I understand because some people just, you know, they record from a studio, or their whole project was about going out to places, or, you know, they shot on location or went out to eat and did reviews and that sort of thing. But there's a couple of people I talked to just from the mental side of things. They've actually said, man, I just don't have the energy right now, or it just doesn't feel the same. You know, one of my friends, he actually mentioned, you know, he connects like the permanency of doing something on YouTube that's going to live forever, kind of with the new state of being becoming permanent for him, and it makes him uncomfortable. So just choosing not to produce things on YouTube right now while he's still doing some stuff on streams. And it's funny because I'm kind of the opposite, right? I'm like, well, I'm at home and I want to stay busy and keep my mind distracted. So I'm just literally putting out content every single day, you know? So it's just interesting how everybody's dealing with this whole situation so drastically differently from person to person. I mean, I've noticed you've even had some content coming out.
Yeah, I have. I've been doing just a lot of and picking up some new games too. I've been playing a bit of Apex Legends lately, and they've, you know, it's like any game that's somewhat popular. If you hadn't logged on or played it in a couple of weeks, they've changed 15 different things and added new characters and new maps and things. And
that does remind me. I wanted to laugh a little bit with you and at you, because I went to watch one of your videos and it was blocked on YouTube.
Madden has some licensed music in it that they paid for, but YouTube still, like, you didn't pay for it. Yeah.
See, that's such a weird, like, and don't get me wrong, I totally understand people that produce material protecting their rights to their material. I honestly do. And I don't have a big problem with that. My problem is, though, in the case of something like Madden, one, like you said, they've already paid for the license to use it, whatever. But it's not like somebody's coming to watch your video because they could faintly hear I don't know, some pop song being played over the speaker system in Madden for all of like 8 seconds, you know?
And it literally is like, it'll show you like from 44:58, you know, it's, you know, you said 6 or 7 seconds of this guy's content. You know, how dare you?
Yeah, that's a bit much.
So of course they can be bad, I think a lot of that, you know, used to be a person was watching it, and now a lot of it's automated. So they've come back and said, look, you know, once everything is fixed, they've told me on most of it, all you said, the one was blocked. But both of them tell like, okay, this is not a copyright claim. We realize what's going on here. But yeah, they blocked one. So I had to just go and magically, it just actually happened that it was in a part of the video that I needed to cut anyway. What are the odds?
Yeah, fair enough. So yeah, in Magic news, we did have a very fun thing happen as we started getting into the Ikoria preview season. So for those of you that somehow, while you've been stuck at home, I guess didn't touch the internet or social media Magic related, we do have a pile of previews already out, both for Ikoria and for Commander 2020. So I think initially when we were told that Commander decks were going to come out alongside Ikoria, we were of the understanding that it was going to be Ikoria boosters and Ikoria Commander decks. I guess they've decided to have the official Commander 2020 release be alongside Ikoria. So it's a little bit confusing in the sense that some of the cards in the Commander 2020 set are using some of the same mechanics and pushing the stuff you will find in Ikoria. So it's kind of a little bit of a jumbled preview season, but regardless, everybody's super excited about it. And there is a ton of chatter on social media right now. Now, my question to you is, though, have you found anything that you actually like, or have you looked at the previews yet?
I have not dug into them yet, so I'm ready to see what kind of strange giant monster kaiju things we have.
Yeah, it is all over the place, man. I won't even ruin it for you. I would just say it's something we'll definitely talk about next week, because we only have 2 more days of previews till the 9th, and I believe the 10th is just where they put out the actual official set list. Okay. So yeah, so we'll know all the cards pretty quick here, but it'll definitely make for good conversation next week. I think that'll be where we kind of address, like we did last time, where we pick a couple of our favorites and we'll talk about them and do our kind of condensed preview or review of the set, yeah. I should say. Also,
click and all that good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. if you're still looking for events to play in, Channel Fireball is still doing their 24/7 coverage. Which, to be honest, that has gone very well. I have seen an interesting mix of different content creators, social personalities, pro players. You know, they're mixing and matching people all day, every day for coverage. And it's pretty neat in the sense that, like, if you don't have anything to watch or you're between doing something, you're like, you know what? I'm just going to check out the Channel Fireball Twitch page and watch some Magic. And you can literally find Magic all day right now. So it's an interesting time to be in, you know, that they're just 24/7 coverage.
Me and Tisha talked about how we've both kind of found some different people to watch in various genres, just, you know, by having all this time on our hands.
Yeah, it's a time to kind of do some discovery. You know, one thing I've told people is, you know, it's one of the few times you're at home and can do that, right? Like, where if you wanted to find out about a new hobby or a new topic, now you have the time to do it. If you want to learn a language, download Duolingo and put in like 2 hours a day or whatever. Like, there's plenty of opportunity there now. Even for myself, like I said, I'm putting content out every day, and I've learned a lot as far as just different ways I can edit stuff or different shortcuts, because I can just put in time to watch other people's videos and things now and figure out what I'm doing better or not. So it's pretty cool to have that kind of time. Like, it sucks why we have the time.
Yeah.
But since it's here, we might as well take advantage of it.
But like you said, I feel like it helps mentally to just have, you know, something, just especially just to keep yourself on a set schedule, because that's so important, to just have a reason to still get out of bed, go try to work a set series of hours, and just have something, like have a to-do list or something that you finish at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I don't know, maybe I didn't mention this last week, but I'm, you know, I've fully aware that when you get out of routine, it can mess with you a little bit mentally. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a day where I just completely break routine. I'm not going to push myself to get something done. I'm not going to, you know, I'm just going to wear pajamas all day or whatever. And by the time I got to the end of the day, I looked at my wife and I was like, man, like, I feel really crappy today by comparison. Like, I wasn't like upset, but just physically, I could just feel it just was different. You know, so every day I get up, mess with my pets, I go take a shower, I get dressed, I sit down in front of the computer to record or edit something, you know, and it's just, I feel so much better come like 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. And, you know, we sit down to watch a show or eat or whatever, but like just being productive and going through that routine every day, like, it's good. I've even started on for those of you that don't follow me on Instagram, I've been doing just like daily tips for positivity while you're in lockdown. So like,
okay.
Yeah. Even that little bit has been good. Yeah. So other things, F&M at home, that has actually gone over very well. I see lots of people interacting with their stores. I've reached out to a couple of retailers and talked to them, and they have a bunch of people sending them their pictures and screenshots and redeeming for codes. I've seen several people online already using the card backs that they got from the codes. So I have to say this is kind of a positive promotion. You know, it's at the very least keeping people in contact with their local stores during this time. Like, I know, and it's funny because there are some retailers that are upset that, oh, but Wizards is doing this thing and pushing people to play online and whatever. But like, what's the alternative right now, though, right? They can't go to a store. So keep them engaged with the product and then give them a reason to keep contacting you so they don't forget about you during these 2 or 3 months that everybody's stuck at home.
I'm sure you don't want the people coming over to your house right now to play the Magic. So like you said, what is the alternative?
Yep. But, you know, we're all making do in an interesting situation. So good job to Wizards. Which, speaking of, it's kind of my next point here that Wizards of the Coast, we talked about it a little bit last week, that they're doing a lot to try to support retailers. I know people are just like, oh, Wizards is making all this money online and they're doing this thing with Star City and blah, blah. But I mean, not Star City, but Channel Fireball. But the truth is, they are doing a lot behind the scenes to help stores out. Like, and I just wanted to point some of these things out to say, like, as much as we do give Wizards a hard time and just the content community as a whole, you know, is very critical, like, we should give credit where people are supporting stores. So one of the things they announced this week is they were already going to send what was going to amount to close to $5 million worth of mystery boosters to retailers for free, just as a way for them to recoup some sales when people come back into the stores, give them something they can make money on, and it's going to be zero cost to them. Like, just a way for them to fatten themselves up a little bit and not have to pay for product, which in and of itself is just huge. Like, that's just, Wizards just giving away that much money. And then this week they put out a notice saying, you know what? What if we just doubled that? Like, we realize more stores are going to need more support, and what they're doing to let people get basically the double allocation is, as long as you prove to them that you are taking pre-orders on upcoming products or in some way organizing events online in the interim, that's going to, I think if they said, if they get something like 70% of the stores or something, or at least showing that, hey, we are still trying to be active, still trying to do stuff, like, they're just going to double what they're giving away to stores. So $10 million worth of product they're just going to give away. Like, that's awesome.
No lie. That's just because they had to do that because we're all, you know, they know we're coming back at some point. So they didn't have to. $10 million is, even for a goodness out of that, that's not exactly a drop in the bucket. That's,
oh, not at all. I mean, that's real numbers. I mean, that's just money they're not going to make. Like, and to be fair, Wizards is also losing money during this time, right? And they're still giving this way on top of it. And then the interesting thing is, one of the things you can do just to prove to them is just like, hey, we are taking pre-orders, say on like Ikoria and Commander, and then send them like the links and whatever to where you have your stuff posted. But they're also giving you codes to give away to your customers for arena swag, right? So if you pre-order, say, Ikoria from your local store, you will get a code that gives you Sarah Avatar, not Sarah Avatar, but Sarah the Angel from Modern Horizons Avatar, the trophy pet, and you'll get Mana Vault sleeve backs in Ikoria. So just contacting your local store, putting your money down or whatever, however your store takes their pre-orders, like you're getting free things in Arena in addition to helping your store out so they can get extra product from Wizards. And then on a lower low-cost thing, they're also setting up some Facebook overlays and whatnot so stores can share them around and be like, hey, I support the store or whatever. So it's like a reminder out there in the social world and people's avatars to kind of reach out and support their local places. So yeah, credit to Wizards of the Coast. There's a lot going on right now, and they are at least doing something. I mean, for as much as people want to say, like, Wizards is always just trying to make the most money, and they're always trying to, I don't know, bend us over backwards and blah, 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 blah. Like, they're putting real money behind trying to keep retail stores propped up. As much as they talk about, they're just trying to drive everybody to Arena, and they're trying to do all this. Like, if this was the plan, this would be the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, if there was ever a better time, if the game plan was, let's say, 24 months from now, we want 90% of our play to be on Arena. Well, with everybody being forced inside, like, this would be the time to just drive everything to Arena and just condense your window, right? That's obviously not the plan. Like, nobody takes basically just giving away $10 million worth of stuff, plus have your people go in and coding extra things and setting up all these codes to give to people and, you know, endless stuff you have people doing for your retail arm if you didn't have a long-term plan to support that. It just doesn't make sense. So I hope at this point we can at least somewhat put those arguments to rest. I mean, I would love that to just not hear that for a while because it's obviously not the narrative.
We can dream.
Well, true. I mean, you know, gamers are going to complain about their things. We're passionate. I get it. But,
There's people that still think this was all created in a lab somewhere and the whole virus is just, it's part of a conspiracy. So,
well, yeah, you know, 4G and 5G created a virus and, you know, like, I've seen some crazy stuff, man. We won't get into that. I mean, I could do a whole, like, man, I have things. I've just, conspiracy theories that I didn't know were things I've discovered in the last couple weeks that just are mind-blowing.
Because the conspiracy theorists got too much time on their hands, too. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's such a wild time. Like, and I feel bad for those people because you have to be driving yourself nuts right now with all the stuff you could possibly run into.
They're picking up on all the episodes of Alex Jones they might have missed beforehand.
Well, yeah, but he has toothpaste that can help reduce the effects of coronavirus.
It might don't kill please. You.
That it's is absolutely not true. As a matter of fact, he got a cease and desist. Please do not buy anything from this man because it is not true.
People gonna huckster. Just...
And then one of the last things I want to touch on is that don't forget the streamer early access event is next week, I believe. So I think on the 15th, so next Wednesday, that all your favorite streamers, your favorite content creators, YouTube personalities, they are going to be online streaming Ikoria. And I think just Ikoria. I don't think we're going to have access to any of the Commander stuff. I don't think that's changed. So all of the Ikoria
streamers include Power Dragon.
That's true. I will be one of them. So yeah, if you want to catch that, I will, if you follow us on Twitter and everything else, I will definitely post the times I'll be on as it gets closer. But since we're home, who knows? I may just do damn near all day because why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna have 24-hour access to all the cards. Like, why not take advantage of it, you know? And then the set will release the following day, I believe, online. So everybody will have access to it. And then we can just start playing with all the new cards. So good times coming, and it's going to be super exciting. I mean, the set so far looks really cool. Like I said, we'll cover a lot of that next week. We'll talk about our favorites and our least favorites, or what we think is going to be the most standout card. Like, there will be, with this set, there is going to be a lot to talk about. I have a feeling that we are, the things we choose will be drastically different. it'll be a lot of fun, though. Well, it's been a few episodes, but you know what that means. We have a guest, as we talked about earlier. So this particular person is somebody who's been in the Magic community for a good while now. I guess we would call him retired judge, but definitely very active in the tournament community and doing work for Star City right now. So why don't we welcome Ricky Hayashi to the show? How are you doing, Ricky?
Hello, I'm ringing your doorbell with my 6-foot pole.
Yeah, exactly. We have to talk through a screen door, I guess.
Throwing rocks at the front door.
Yeah. So how are you holding up out there?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, I'm working from home, and instead of going to the gym, I'm running outside. But it's still life. Life finds a way.
So why don't you tell us about, like, how did you get started in Magic? How'd you find the game and then over time eventually end up at Star City?
Oh, so I believe my first pack that I bought was Unlimited.
Nice.
I was introduced to the game at a friend's birthday party and really enjoyed it. Started playing. We had a play group. I bought a single Magic card for $20. All my friends laughed at me. It was Mox Ruby.
Oh, you got the last laugh.
Did I? I eventually like cashed it out for like maybe $100. So I don't know about that.
Hey, you still turned $20 into $100.
I turned a profit. Yeah. Well, not if you count everything else I bought. But I left the game like a lot of people did around Chronicles. You know, they reprinted a bunch of cards that did have value, and it was kind of disappointing. And a few years later, I came back to a local card shop. And back then, it was still, you know, mostly sports cards and some trading card games. So I came back and I bought a pack of 1989 Upper Deck. And if you're a fan of baseball cards, you know that this was the set. It was kind of the first premium baseball card set.
Yeah, yeah. Is that the one where everybody was chasing the Ken Griffey rookie card?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. See, so you know about it. So I bought one pack. Yeah. I opened a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card.
Oh, what? Gosh, how lucky.
And that was it. I was back in terms of, like, I was coming to this card shop every day. And then it was like, oh, Magic the Gathering. I remember that game. Actually, it was Pokemon first. I started playing the Pokemon card game. And then that got me back into Magic the Gathering. So this was around the early 2000s. I started going to the local events, you know, pre-releases, PTQs and stuff. And I got, so my origin story is that as a judge is that I got a bad ruling at a PTQ. And in the back of my head, I'm just like, I could do better than this person.
Yep.
And it took a couple of years after that. I think maybe like another year after that until I played in my first Grand Prix event. I lived in California at the time. This is Grand Prix Oakland. And didn't make day two because it's my first Grand Prix. You know, like what am I expecting? But I went to Toby Elliott, who was the local bigwig judge. And I had been talking to him at a couple of PTQs about my interest in judging. I said, hey, Toby, I scrubbed out of the GP. I think it's time. Give me the test. And that is, as they say, you know, how it began, like how our relationship began. He and I became great friends after that. And of course, judged many tournaments together. I rose up through the ranks, eventually became, you know, level 2, level 3, level 4 for about a month and a half. And it's been 15 years as a judge, and I pretty much did everything you could possibly do in the world of judging. And you mentioned retired. It's a weird time to retire, right? Because there's not really tournaments right now. But
yeah, exactly.
I had been doing a kind of like Brett Favre thing for the last couple of years, where it's like every Pro Tour I went to or Mythic Championship I went to, I would tell people, you know, this might be my last one. And they would roll their eyes. Like, that you've been saying that for the last 2 years.
Oh, see, we've updated that. That's now called the Drew Brees.
Oh, okay. Well, for me, I was a Green Bay Packers fan. But yeah, you know, and I feel like this year, this past year, the changes have been big enough that I think I'm probably done, but you never know. And it's, I can always come back if I want. So it's not like if I quote unquote retire, unlike sports, you know, unless you are Brett Favre or like Michael Jordan, it's not really permanent, you know, because there's nothing physically or mentally that's going to prevent me from coming back and still being good at it.
That's true. That's true. I think that's something people forget, even about Magic itself as a game. Yeah. I think we see several of our best players still are slowly getting older. And it's not like a lot of the other games you see where it's predominantly dominated by people that are like 16 to 23, you know? And
yeah. So John Finkel, you
just play forever.
John Finkel became a Hall of Famer, you know, had a fantastic career, kind of did the same thing, right? Like semi-retired for a bit, like only maybe showed up to US Pro Tours, but then like got on a roll, found a team. And then he had like a second career that was also Hall of Fame worthy.
Yeah.
Nice work. And it's so, get it.
Yeah. I think it's just crazy to see that happen, you know, and I think people forget sometimes because you look and there's still Huey still around, you know, some of the, just the old guard that's been around that's played, you know, you go back and look at coverage from like 01 and you're like, oh, this dude was making top eights then, you know, like, and they're still playing now. But it's funny because if you look at other games, a lot of them, you're just like, oh, well, this person talks about themselves as being a retired player from this other thing, and they're like 26. Like, that's so, it's so strange to see that sometimes, and you forget how different Magic is than a lot of other games.
And that's the beauty of it, too, because we're also seeing this generational gap, I guess, where original Magic players who have been playing as long as I have kids, and those people are starting to play and starting to do well. You know, like a Dana Fisher, right? Like she's amazing. And she is going to have an amazing career if she keeps playing this game.
I look at somebody like Dana and I just think, I feel like every year we're just going to see like, cause you know, she was like the youngest player to make a day two at a Grand Prix. And then the youngest player to cash at a Grand Prix. And then next thing, it'll be like youngest player to qualify for like a Players Tour event. And then the youngest player to make the Players Tour final. I feel like she's going to be one of those people that we're just going to like the new youngest everything.
Maybe it'll be along. Close. I believe, you know, one of the world champions was maybe like 16 years old. So it's going to be difficult.
Okay, well, she's got some work to do then. Yeah. She's got to hurry.
No like, pressure.
The clock's ticking.
Yeah. So anyway, you also mentioned Star City Games. I've been working for Star City Games for about 10 years with a little like 1 year gap in the middle. Currently, my position is the organized play staffing representative, which is colloquially called the judge manager. So for all of our SCG tour events, I am responsible for selecting the staff, communicating with them, and then I help them, you know, run the events.
Okay. Now, with, I guess, kind of the whole rules, I don't even know what we're calling that now, the rules advisor group changing and, I guess, certifying judges, how has that affected your job?
You're talking about Judge Academy, I guess?
Yes, that.
Yeah. That. It hasn't really affected us yet. We're still in discussion about what to do going forward. We haven't fully decided on a course of action. So it's, yeah, and that's been part of, you know, what this last year has been about is like figuring out what this means, for the future of Magic judges and for events like ours. So I'm going to have to give you a rain check on the final answer on that.
Oh, that's totally okay. And thinking about just the Star City Open series, like, how, I mean, I know from the outside looking in, like the growth of that series is very impressive. You know, how far separated is this kind of where it is now from where y'all like anticipated it going when it started?
Well, when we started, I mean, when I say we, it started before I joined the company as mm-hmm. like the, I think it was called like the 5K series. I was hired back in 2010 when they had this ambition to expand it into more of what it is now. We were getting, I don't know, like 400 to 500 people for the main event, the Open. And now, you know, anywhere from 700 to multiple events over 1,000. So just the player growth in that regard has been phenomenal. And I'm not sure where we're going to go. I mean, and this whole coronavirus thing is kind of a weird pause button on everything, really. But the trajectory had been positive, right, in terms of attendance.
Oh, absolutely.
And we had just seen the introduction of Pioneer, and that had really revitalized what had been kind of a down year, you know, 2019. Standard wasn't great. Modern wasn't great. Yeah, that caused some problems. Oko had to be banned everywhere. So we were excited to see what Pioneer was going to do. Still excited, you know, once we hit the reset button, see where we go.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned, you know, the virus situation, which sort of leads to my next question there is, you know, how is this affecting your plans or even for what you have to do, you know, planning for these next couple of months? Because obviously you've had to cancel a lot of events. I assume there's people on like standby just trying to figure out when they may or may not be able to work for you again. I mean, how difficult is all that to deal with right now?
Yeah, it's been devastating in a sense. Because, you know, all of the stuff that you see from the U.S. government about stimulus packages, unemployment benefits, and all of that, unfortunately, Magic judges were in a really difficult position as contractors because, you know, it makes all those rules more complicated regarding unemployment. And if you just cancel 2 to 3 months worth of events, that's they're losing that income right out of nowhere. And my expectation is that when we come out of this, we will see a large number of the people we thought of as career judges, you know, who did this as their primary source of income, kind of disappear out of necessity, that they had to go and find, you know, day jobs and different careers that were not tied to this week to week, month to month, you know, contract situation with events. So yeah, that will change like the way staffs are made up, I think.
Yeah, that's something I hadn't really considered, but I mean, I remember, you know, you're owning your own business, that even changes the rules for everything. So I can only imagine if you're a career contractor, I mean, that's got to be even more difficult.
And some people are luckier, right? They do it as kind of the side hustle, the side gig. So they're not going to be as affected. But I have many friends who this judging events every week or every other week was their primary source of income. I know they're hurting and they're trying to figure out what the new life situation is going to be.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that it's easy to, in a lot of ways, just forget about judges, you know, or even just event officials in general, because you don't necessarily interact with them much in a lot of cases, but those people help the events happen. They schedule all the things. They, like you're saying, your job is to make sure there's people there so the event runs smoothly. You know, there's people who are dealing with the contracts for the venues and you know, just an endless list of people that make these events happen. And all of those people are without jobs right now.
Yeah, so, I mean, every part of the economy, it's just we're seeing how interconnected everything is and how interconnected the world is. It's stunning.
Yeah, we sometimes forget that it's the world's a lot smaller than we think it is on some days. So we have found out more about you, but we want to dive in a little bit and hit you with 5 fire questions, as we like to do with our guests.
All right.
Our guests tend to be very sharp, but let's see how they respond when we put their feet to the fire in 5 fire questions. All right, so the way this works is I get to ask you 3 pretty serious questions, and then Brian, being our resident comedian gets to ask you two more lighthearted questions. So we don't get to grill you too hard.
Now, Brian, why do you only get two? Why is it 3-2?
Man, me and my agent have talked about that at length.
I'm here for you. I appreciate it.
That's true. We could fight to go three goofy questions if you would like. We could do that.
If he can think of an extra one on the fly.
Sounds good. So my first thing I wanted to ask you, from a judge perspective, what set has caused the most rules issues for you at an event or for a series of events?
Ooh, interesting. Gosh, I think it actually has to be War of the Spark. So.
Oh, interesting.
From a straight like game rules perspective, probably not. And I might have to think about a different answer for that. But the problem with War of the Spark was Teferi, Time Raveler, right?
For sure.
You can't cast spells when it's not your turn, or you can only cast spells when you can cast a sorcery.
Yeah.
Narset, Parter of Veils, can't draw more than one card. Karn, whatever he was, the great creator, like artifacts can't be activated. All of these, what we call, you know, like prison style effects where your opponent can't do something that they are normally used to doing. If you do that thing when you're not supposed to, that's a game rule violation or some other tournament violation. And then the judge would have to get involved, right? Like, oh, you drew two cards when you were only supposed to draw one. And then you have to handle that as a hidden card error. You know, they call it the Thoughtseize fix, etc. So yeah, when that set came out and those planeswalkers saw play, we saw a huge rise in those tournament violations, and actually had to change some of the rules around those violations to make them less punitive because it was happening so frequently.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I guess that makes perfect sense, actually. I hadn't really thought about it from that perspective. But yeah, they're worse. Those were, and not only that, those were cards that got played a lot. So I can only imagine how many times that came up.
Another similar situation was Courser of Krufix from a violation standpoint. Just people, you know, not revealing the card, or after Courser died, like revealing the next card by accident, stuff like that. So just that kind of like physical dexterity stuff with unusual effects tend to cause a lot of problems.
Well, congratulations, because the new Vivian's going to probably cause some problems with people peeking at their top card and whatnot and trying to play extra creatures. And we'll see how that works.
Yeah, I think Mutate may be one of those rules, game rules questions cards of like, how does this work? Because we already saw they had the AMA with Eli Schiffer and the rules manager. And people are, you know, confused, like, what happens if I have a morph and I mutate on it and then I turn the morph face up, etc. So it's very interesting. And I have not, like, fully caught up on all those rules yet.
What I'm afraid of with mutate is at some point either I'm going to do it or my opponent's going to do it. But, like, we're going to play it onto a human creature.
Sure, yeah.
Like, because you can only play it on a non-human. And I could see, and honestly, I can see people being upset that their opponent does it, but I could totally see how that would be an honest mistake.
Yeah, especially if it's a token and you're just like using a card sleeve or something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like I'm. It's one of those things you're going to have to be aware of, but I can definitely see that coming up.
Yeah.
So my second question, what's among the events you've worked or places you've traveled, what has been your favorite?
Ooh, wow. I've traveled to so many places that it is hard for me to pick one. I mean, I guess like from a totality of the entire trip, I would have to say Pro Tour Kyoto, which was a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. The reason is it was also my honeymoon.
So wow, that's convenient.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of set it up that way in the scheduling. So got to go to Japan with my wife, Sarah. Got to see my grandmother, who, you know, I don't get to see that often because she lives in Japan. We went to the temple in Nara, where they have the deer. I don't know if you're familiar, the deer temple, where these deer just come up to you and demand that you give them the deer biscuits. They're very tame.
That sounds awesome.
And also, the Pro Tour itself was actually the first time that I got to wear the burgundy shirt at a Pro Tour. I was the support judge for my good friend Jeff Morrow, who was the head judge, or the appeals judge, I guess is the term. So all in all, like, ticks off all the marks for a great trip.
Yeah, that sounds like you had a lot going on. That sounds like it was a great week. Yeah. And then my final question is, and this is something to, I guess, kind of help your job go a little easier in the future. What is the best tip you would give to players to just help make events run smoother?
Oh, wow. A tip to make events run smoother from a player perspective. If I could just ask people to be kind to each other, you know, fellow players, to the staff, and just like anyone you interact with, like, it's, you're packing 1,000 people into a room for 12 hours or whatever, right? For our mm-hmm. events, you know, for F&Ms, it's different. But any environment where you're spending that much time in proximity with other people, you gotta be kind, because misunderstandings are going to happen. You're going to bump into people at the pairings board. Just please, you know, don't get worked up about stuff and try to be good to each other.
That's sound advice. I can get behind that for sure. Brian, why don't you hit him with your two questions?
Three questions?
Exactly, or your questions, I should say.
I actually only have two. First of all, what would you say was a card that defied expectations for you? Whether it was, you thought it was great and turned out to be bad, or vice versa? Just which the card that totally didn't go the way you thought it was going to go?
Okay. So, I used to be more involved in writing in the community. That's kind of how I got started as a community member, is I wrote for what was at the time brainburst.com.
Oh, yeah.
Now
yeah.
known as TCG Player or TCG Player Infinite, I guess. And then transitioned to writing for Star City Games. But when I wrote for Brainburst, I actually did a set review for Future Sight. And I gave a certain magic card 0 stars or whatever, like 0 out of 5. And that card was Tarmogoyf. So I was wrong.
I think anybody that reviews things has had one that's turned that way, where you thought something was terrible and it turned out to be the greatest.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll just always remember that. I got very caught up in, because it had they seeded the Planeswalker type. Because it mentions all the card types that it looks at, it says Planeswalkers, which didn't exist yet. And I got real caught up in that. I was like, what is this nonsense? Like, this is stupid. No, 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 no.
Oh, man, that reminds me. I have to share my Tarmogoyf story on another episode at some point. But, yeah, I went through a stretch and made quite a bit of money on some Tarmogoyfs.
It might be a good time to invest now, right? Like,
it could be.
Yeah. All right, for my fire question, if you could give one more season to any TV show, what show would it be?
Ooh, gosh. So this is a show that was really good and I just like didn't get enough out of. That's hard because there are shows that I like that I think were just the right length. Like, would I say Battlestar Galactica? Because that show was only like 4 seasons, but the last season was kind of weird.
Yeah.
And out there.
I would agree.
So, actually, you know what? Let me go a different path. I'm going to go with Pushing Daisies. That show got canceled too soon. It was hitting its peak, and I think it was really ahead of its time in terms of the writing and all that. I'm gonna say Pushing Daisies.
That's one more reason for me to like you, because that was definitely an underrated show for sure.
I just really like feel good stuff. And if there's a little singing, that's great. I watched every season of Glee. That one, no additional season, please, but still a good show.
Yeah, Pushing Daisy. Now you just made me want to go watch that show again.
Have a great time. And for anybody
that got it on DVD,
I don't know who's streaming it, but I'm sure somebody is.
Oh, for sure.
On a similar show, did you ever watch Cupid?
No.
This was Jeremy Piven and Paula Marshall. And the premise of the show was that Jeremy Piven thinks he is Cupid, the god of love. Oh, and he has been kicked out of Olympus to walk the earth as a mortal human. And Paula Marshall is his therapist, who thinks he's just a guy who's delusional, because he's like, I'm Cupid, like I can. So his punishment for getting kicked out of Olympus, what he needs to do to get back, I think it was like 50. He needs to make 50 matches, like love matches between people, and then he gets to come back to Olympus. And so I think that show had like 2 seasons. And obviously, like, if it reached its natural conclusion, the belief would have to be that the 50th match would be him and his therapist, right? Like, because they're
you would assume
on again, off again, like will they, won't they type of relationship.
And I'm assuming he is going to turn out to be Cupid, but I guess we never find that out.
Yeah. But the way I imagined it ending is like they kiss. And then he like disappears in a puff of smoke and like gets whisked off to Olympus, and then shenanigans happen from that.
But I never got that. I've heard of that show, so that's I gotta check that out.
But I don't think one more season would have been enough. I feel like it needed like 5 or 6 seasons, so I'm gonna stick with Pushing Daisies. Good stuff.
That's a good answer,
for sure. And since we have a guest on the show, I think we need to set the dinner table so all we right. can have a short conversation on the way out. Yeah, because why not?
Oh, there's sound effects for this.
It is. Brian's got to set the table. I know, we just have too much fun with our soundboards is really what it is.
If I had a soundboard, I would have way too much fun with it too.
Yeah, we discovered it can only hold, I think, what do we say that? 11 sounds at once. So we do get restrained. Yeah. But yeah, one of the things we just kind of want to touch on, especially since we have a experienced judge in our presence at the moment, is that, you know, on the show, we've talked about different types of discriminatory situations that people have run into, whether it's because of a situation with somebody being disabled or having racial expletives yelled at them or whatever it is, you know, and we're talking about like, what are some ways to best resolve these situations because I think that's kind of part of the problem for some players when I speak to them is they're like, well, I had this happen, but I didn't want to be weird or I didn't want to create this situation or I didn't know how to do it without getting backlash from the other player. And I feel like you've probably dealt with some of these. So, you know, let's say somebody does have an encounter with some type of derogatory language being used toward them. Like, what is the best way to approach a judge or a staff member to get that situation resolved?
Oh, wow. I mean, that's... I would just say, just do it, right? The Nike slogan, like you have to cross that threshold and talk to someone in a position of authority at the event. But it's I know it's not that easy, and this is where my other piece of advice would come in, is that the staff have to make it abundantly clear that they will listen, that they will take these issues seriously, and that they will handle things in the appropriate manner. Otherwise, like, people don't come forward. And it's one of these things where the phrase virtue signaling, you know, has been co-opted and used negatively. But I believe absolutely that people in these positions, judges, tournament organizers, need to virtue signal hard and tell people, tell players where the lines are, that if they are crossed, will be dealt harshly. Otherwise, it's unclear. You know, if you're new in a setting and you're like, oh, this terrible thing happened, this person called me a terrible name, but I don't think anyone's going to care, or I don't think it's serious enough. The staff needs to let people know that it's serious and that it will get dealt with. It's I think it's one of the most important things, really.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is one of the things when I ran events, we tried to bring up. It's just like, hey, if you have any type of problem, come talk to one of us. Like, we will deal with it. You don't have to handle it, whatever it is, you know. But you're right. I mean, if the players don't know that that's the mindset, it's like, okay, do I even know what the outcome of this is if I bring it up?
Yeah, it's something that, if possible, you know, like I have several friends who head judge our events, and they put it in their opening announcements. They say, hey, this environment is for everyone. If anything at all makes you feel uncomfortable, please come talk to me. You know, and that sets an expectation and is really important, I feel.
Yeah, and here's another thing too, other than being the direct victim of something happening. I've heard of players being in a situation where they've witnessed something.
Yeah.
But you kind of see that the other person's uncomfortable or kind of blew it off, and it's like, no, it's not that big a deal, you know, whatever. Like, what should a witness to a thing like that do if they weren't directly involved?
I mean, still bring it up. Or, you have to read the situation, but possibly confront the situation. I mean, this is a problem. You know, we have the bystander problem. Sure. Where if a crime is committed in front of multiple people, all of those people think that someone else will deal with it. You know, someone else will stop the crime, or someone else will call the cops. I don't have to do it. And then no one ends up doing it. Right. So you have to get around that mentality and say, no, like, I have to be the one that does something here. And we start to see this in social media, right? Where we see these videos of people who are being racist towards someone, and then a bystander steps in, and then they also video record it. And it's so important for people to do that. A couple of weeks ago, you know, Lawrence Harmon, who you had on here previously, I believe, asked about, how do you feel about the word ally? Or like people who call themselves allies, right? And there was a lot of kind of eye rolling about that, because you can't just declare yourself an ally and be done with it. It's really about actions, and you have to go out there and do the things.
Yeah, and prove yourself that you're being supportive. Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, and I totally get where y'all are coming from, because there are many people that will say, I'm an ally to this cause, but it's kind of like in words only. You know, like, at what point you say, okay, well, what have you done really to help somebody in those scenarios or in that space, or even speak up on social media on somebody's behalf or whatever, you know, just so they feel supported.
Yeah. So, I mean, the words are important. Like I said earlier, like the act of virtue signaling, or what I call value signaling, letting people know like where you stand on issues is important. But if you aren't willing to take the actions that are necessary to stop the bad things from happening when you do see them, then yeah, you're not an ally. Like it's a problem.
Oh, definitely.
And I, you know, I've struggled with this myself. Like, I fully admit that I have been in situations where afterwards I think, like, dang it, like, I wish I had said something or spoken up. And I've tried to become better about this, about building up my courage, and have been able to do that. And I know I talk to a lot of judges, and they struggle with this, where they'll see something happen and afterwards they'll say, you know what, I really should have given that person an unsporting conduct infraction for what they did. And yeah, you should have. Like, that's, you know, hindsight is 20/20. Hopefully that kind of retrospection leads to better action in the future. but
I guess, you know,
it's hard. It's courage. It takes courage.
I kind of brought up a related question I thought of is, I mean, obviously you get a lot of rules questions at events, but how often would you say you have to deal with, I guess, behavioral issues at your tournaments?
Everyone. I mean,
okay,
on average. And it ranges in how serious it is, but off the top of my head, like, I can definitely think of, like, here's one that happened at this one, here's one that happened at this one. So it's happened. It happens. And it's not always, I want to make something clear, like, it's not always malicious, right?
Oh, yeah.
Unsporting conduct could just be something like yelling real loud when you're frustrated. You know, like, you don't top deck something and your opponent does, and you just think, like, oh, F this. That's unsporting conduct. You can't do that. And we all have moments of frustration, so it's understandable, but you still got to deal with it because it's like, hey, like, you can't do that because you're making your opponent feel uncomfortable, maybe the players next to you, etc.
There's kids in the room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like the language itself, sure.
Cool. Yeah, but I think you're right. I think pretty much what we're coming around to is just, you know, we, from a staff perspective, just be proactive about messaging that, hey, we are here to listen, you know, and then from the player side, just go say something, go do something about it. Don't give people a free pass for having that behavior.
Yeah. And really, like, another part of it is general communication between players and judges. I have been in this community for a long time, but I have also worked on building up relationships with people in the community, not just judges, but with players as well. I count many of them as good friends, and that has led to them being willing to come to me with something when it comes up, where maybe if it was a different, like, you know, if something comes up and they see a judge and it's me, they're like, oh, yeah. Like, he will listen to me because we've had discussions about this.
That's a good point.
So it's, one of the people that influenced me when I was coming up was Sheldon Mennery.
Oh, yeah. Sheldon's a great guy.
We all still know because of Commander.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But he was a level 5 judge when I was coming up through the system. And he was already writing on the Star City website. So he was well known to players. And as I forged a similar career as a writer and became known for that, I talked to Sheldon at one event and I said, how do you deal with the fact that you have these friendly relationships with many known players because of your position as a writer in the community and the potential, you know, accusations of bias that people may think you have? And his advice to me that I have always tried to follow and impart on other judges is treat every single player as your friend instead of, like, not treating your friends as friends, right? So try to build that persona and that relationship with as many people as you can and make everyone feel like they can come to you with stuff.
That makes sense. Don't force yourself to lessen the other relationships you've cultivated. Just raise the other ones up so everybody feels it's equal.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, those relationships are important, as all relationships between people are. But emphasizing that and really showing yourself to be a man or a woman or a non-binary person of the people. And mm-hmm. even as I kind of, like, sunset my judge career, like, I have tried to raise my profile as a player. And hopefully, like, I will still have a place in this community of influence where I can, you know, make people see, like, where we need to go. Like, we're not even close, right? Like, well, that's part of the reason you have this podcast.
Exactly. I've told people before, I would love to be at a point where we say, hey, our podcast isn't needed anymore.
we solved everything.
Yeah, exactly. But until then, you know, we're going to keep having guys like you on the show.
Yeah, I just had a brief conversation with someone on Twitter. So I play a lot of Pokemon Go now, and this person is a Pokemon Go player, and they mentioned that they used to play Magic, but because of the toxicity towards women, the woman, that they stopped playing. And in that conversation, I was like, well, I think it's gotten better, but I still can't, you know, in good conscience, tell you that it's good. And that's where I think we are. I think we have improved noticeably, but there's still so much work to do in all these regards.
Yeah, I agree with you totally on that point. I've been in the industry long enough to see that the progress is definitely there and it has gotten better, but there are several situations that sadly I still would not classify as good.
Oh, yeah.
But all right, I think that's where we're going to wrap it up for this week. That was a lot. We covered a lot of ground today. But yeah, Ricky, why don't you give everybody your social tags and where they can find you or whatever projects you're involved with online?
So I am on Twitter, is my primary social media, as at MTG Rickipedia. So that's Magic the Gathering, and then like the website, but with an R.
I love it.
The person who has the at Rickipedia has been suspended. So I did contact like Twitter customer service. I'm like, hey, you suspended this person. Any chance I can get their username? And I haven't heard back.
Well, I'll root for you and hopefully you can get it.
Yeah. In terms of projects, I have recently, in the last couple months, started guest hosting with my friend Matthew West Fox and my wife Sarah on the Star Wars Universe podcast. And we alternate. We do the episodes pertaining to the Clone Wars, the cartoon. And then he has another guest host who they come on and they talk about the Mandalorian on Disney+.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. If you ever want to chat about Darth Vader and Kylo Ren, I am here for it.
And if you that's something I'm definitely going to have to look up for sure.
Yeah, please check it out. It's something I keep forgetting to plug on my social media, and I'll probably try to do that in this after we wrap up here.
Well, yeah, we can include a link in the show notes as well for people who want to check it out.
Sure, yeah. I will send that to you afterwards.
Cool. And Brian, where can they find you?
I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. And Alan's Ever After is our family-related YouTube channel.
And as usual, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragon. On just about all social media platforms, spending a lot of time on Twitch now. Normally I'm on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time, but spending a little extra time since I have it available. And then, of course, you can find me on YouTube. If you want new content, I have stuff coming out every day. But yeah, again, I want to thank Ricky for coming and hanging out with us. That was a lot of information. It was good to have a judge perspective on the show. And I want to say thank you for all of you that are listening. Hopefully we're giving you some entertaining content to listen to while we're all at home, hopefully doing the right thing and taking care of ourselves. So whenever you're watching, listening, we're on the podcast now. So whenever you're listening, wherever you're listening from, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.